Can you hear me?
Good afternoon, Joanne and listeners. I'm doing pretty good.
Good. So, well, first of all, thank you guys for sponsoring this program and for bringing this very important topic to the public. And I'm hoping moving forward that we can hear more and not just this month. What is your take on education? We know, and those of you who don't know, Carrie Ann is blind. Carrie Ann went to school at Commamere up and on and did exceptionally well. What are some of the challenges? If you see any improvements now versus what it was then, and now in this environment that we're in, what are some of the challenges and possible solutions that you think that we can put on the table to help our children? And you've been there, you've been to the school, you know what the challenges are even before COVID. So let us know about what you've experienced and what you're seeing now and what can be done better.
Well, what I will say, Joanne, first off, I want to commend the special needs educators in Barbados. The teachers have been working really hard. The teachers, the administrators have been doing really good job in trying to make sure that their children are maintained. We do accept that there are going to be some deficits, but we are really happy to see the effort has been put in there. We felt it was important to raise this topic today during the Month of the Disabled, because as the theme said, we want to build back better. We want to make sure that things strengthen, and they can only strengthen if we participate and sound our voice. Now, all of that fancy talk set aside, there are still some challenges. The technology is available that can support students with special needs, those who can be incorporated using those media. There is the technology available, and we have been seeing more and more of it set out and put away and you know, sorted out for the children. But the challenge will always remain that there still isn't enough, and there still is not enough trained persons in the technology to support the special needs students. So that is something that we definitely want to see building on. The direction that we're going in is great, but we need to ramp it up a bit on that one. You know, sometimes when I think about the educational system, when I went into school and where we are now, I'm really happy to see so many improvements through electronic. I'll talk about blind or vision impaired, since that's the category I fall into. The blind or vision impaired student, when I was at school, I had to get all my textbooks done in Braille. No Brailling was done in Barbados, and it had to be brought in from Canada. And sometimes I got the textbooks weeks before the exam that other students had 2 years before. Now, it is a case of once you have access to the printed work, once you have access to the electronic copy, you can get it at the same time. Unfortunately, there are still some barriers that are inhibiting access to electronic, accessible electronic solutions for textbooks, for blind or visually impaired, and indeed children with print disabilities of any kind. So that is another area. Tertiary level students with disabilities also have challenges, because more of our tertiary level organizations, institutions, need to have an emphasis on students with special needs. University of the West Indies, Barbados Community College, and others, they do have programs in place, but it doesn't meet all of the needs. Like, I mean, that's basically what we've been seeing over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So when ministry speaks of devices, tailor-made specifically for Irving Wilson, what do we have here that we need to bring in? I mean, there are programs for the blind and the visually impaired for children now on these systems that you see, Carrie, now we don't use the Braille now for the online teaching. What is it?
Yes,
then
we
that
do.
We use a Braille. Not do we use? Well, there you go. I thought it would be a case of having the computer and doing.
No. There are measures. And let me say that the Irving Wilson School, I always say, and I make no apologies, they are definitely a model of how to get things done. Mm-hmm. They do have, the ministry has given them a lot of technological support. They've gotten a lot of programs. They've got a lot of the devices that they do need at the school. So they do have those in place. And just the answer to your question, the Braille, yeah. For example, there are Braille displays as well, because I am a strong proponent of using Braille, because there is still no other means by which a blind and visually impaired child can get the same level of you know, understanding and reading and pronunciation and stuff as the sighted child. So it's the only method by which, because you can sit and listen to things as long as you like, mm-hmm. but if you don't see the spelling, so to speak, mm-hmm. you still can't get it done properly. So there needs to be some emphasis on that. Yeah. So there still is Braille available. And like I said, the Irving Wilson School
easily available here now?
I won't say easily available, but it is available. And the Irving Wilson School, since you mentioned them, the Irving Wilson School does its part in trying to make sure that they equip the children with access to this information and the technology. So they are working through their programs and stuff like that. So yes, there is, it is there, and it just needs to be broadened. But they are doing a really great job.
Someone is here writing and asking, do you know how many children with special needs right now we have at school? In school?
I don't Roughly? Have the figure. I don't know if Cheryl or Ms. Bradford Warden has the figure.
I don't have the exact figure, but I do recall in a meeting just this week, Ms. Kay Sargent, she's a senior education officer in student services and responsible overall for special needs. She did say there were approximately about 350 students. That's not an exact number, but that was an approximation.
That's private and government? Or does
no, sorry, that was government.
That was just government. And Dr. Rock, how many do you have at your school? How many children at your school?
We currently have 154 students, but that includes our adult population. So around 60, maybe 65 secondary school school age students.
A parent wants to know if you have a child with ADD. This is on my phone. When you go to school, is it that they need to put the children on medication, or is there another ways and means of educating a child with ADD without having to put them on medication? Don't know who can answer that.
The way in which we treat students with ADHD, it has a multidimensional approach. Mm-hmm. I will say to you that oftentimes the recommendation is for medication. It depends on the child, and it depends on how they're able to balance the challenges they have in with regards to functioning. So, for example, my daughter, I have an 18-year-old, and she has ADHD, but she was not put on medication because she was able to function well within the classroom and to do generally things she had to do is at home where I had the challenge. But if a student is having challenges functioning within the classroom or just the average day-to-day things, more likely than not, the recommendation is when they're seen by the psychiatrist or the general practitioner for medication review, a lot of the times they do recommend medication.
Just for those persons who not understanding what it is you just described, could you kind of spell out the acronym for it and what it is exactly? One parent is saying that she, a friend of mine, just got diagnosed her son, a primary school level, as having attention deficit disorder. Is that the correct name?
ADHD is attention deficit hyperactive disorder. It is that student who has difficulty staying still, mm-hmm. focusing on lessons, focusing on the tasks at home, difficulty with self-regulation, difficulty with impulses, controlling impulses, and so on. Mm-hmm. Like anything else, there are some students who the challenge is minimal, and some who have the challenge is greater. And so that would determine whether you need to be on the medication or not. There's some children who just cannot sit still in front of a teacher in the class unless they are medicated. The thing is with ADHD is that it could be impacted by so many different things. So for example, a child who is also having social issues, who may be dealing with other things in the home environment, maybe domestic violence, maybe challenges with social welfare provision, meaning, you know, having enough to eat at home, mm-hmm. Having things provided for, that is going to cause the child's presentation to become exacerbated. So that's why I said it's a multidimensional approach, mm-hmm. and medication really should be a last resort once you have put the other things in place, once you have put the modification in place in terms in the classroom, for example, if teacher diversifies how he or she presents the lessons and involves the different modalities, they do the visual learning, the auditory learning, the learning through doing example. So it's really a multidimensional approach. Typically, once a child is referred to student services and we suspect that the child has ADHD, our protocols dictate that we send them to a psychiatrist who reviews to determine if medication management is recommended in the particular case. Okay. Things like behavior management, parenting, counseling to assist the child in choosing, you know, options, for example, are things that can also be done to assist.
Okay, and someone here is asking, okay. All right, let's quickly, because we have got 1:15, let's not forget the deaf and hard of hearing. Now, let me just commend VOB, Dennis Johnson, everybody, for ensuring that we do have someone sign in for the deaf and hard of hearing. What is it like for this online teaching? Face-to-face, in a COVID environment, can anyone speak on having to teach or parent a child who is deaf or hard of hearing in this environment? What are the challenges for this specific disability? Dr. Rock, Jillian, I mean, no, I know that you may not, but in terms of the sending, because I have a message here that the clear mask that they're wearing. Now, first of all, they need to see your face, but because they can't, we need to see theirs. And they're wearing this clear, hard plastic mask, and it's not being accepted by some, from what I'm understanding. I'm not sure why, because it's still a protective mask. Anyone can say in terms of the right. Online teaching, teachers are obviously sign in with the Google G Suite technology that we have?
I guess I'll respond on, we don't have any students at the moment at the school who are deaf or hard of hearing, mm-hmm. but we do have a lot of students who struggle with their communication. And I guess in terms of the online platform, that was a little bit easier for the students because obviously there were no masks. But last term, it then occurred the opposite. When we were face-to-face and having to wear masks, quite a lot of students struggled because they were unable to see the lips and facial expressions become so important in terms of being a strong and effective communicator. So in terms of what we try to do at the school is, as you said, try to wear the face shields as much as we could when we needed to have that almost like one-on-one support with students who need to read the entire face in order to get as much information as they can about feelings or, you know, the situation that surrounds them. I'm hoping that someone will be able to speak to exactly how it was with the online platform.
Well,
what I can say, what I can say, Joanne, mm-hmm. is that with the Google, I don't teach the deaf or anything like that. But what I will say is that internationally, the Google Classroom is being one of those programs that helps students who are deaf better, because they have one of the better closed captioning live transcription services for, that's not for the deaf, that's just in general. Mm-hmm. So the deaf community tend to prefer using that platform because they can use the Google Meet, and in using Google Meet, not just for the children, but for the adults as well, they find that the deaf are responding better in that environment. So that's one, that's a definite area where we have a good reputation going there for our students who are special needs, who are deaf and hard of hearing.
A quick question on my phone, they're asking, where do children who are deaf and hard of hearing go to school in this country? Are they fully integrated into the mainstream? Because Dr. Rock obviously said that she does not
there
have
is,
any.
There is, of course, the Irvin Wilson School mm-hmm. that has been there for years, mm-hmm. Since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. There has been a program for a number of years. I'm sure Juanita can speak to this. There's been a program in some of the primary schools, mainstream primary schools, where you've had deaf and hard of hearing children incorporated into the school, facilitated by sign language interpreters. And some have gone on to secondary school and even tertiary level institutions as well, supported by the sign language support persons. So they do have students who are deaf that have gone through the full mainstream. Even one of them went up and on, yeah. So we've got, so they're definitely, but the Irvin Wilson School is the school for mm-hmm. the deaf. That's where they start. That's where more students start.
All right. Well, we only have a few more minutes. I'm going to let everybody just give me a little 1 minute here in closing. Jillian, I'll start with you. Then Dr. Rupp, Ministry of Education. Carrie, I'll end with you. Jillian? Any closing remarks?
Okay. Yes, please. What I will say is I'm just going to quote a little bit from something I read from Harvard University regarding special needs and education. And what they did say is that we should strive to prioritize the things that children require even more than schooling, which is physical and emotional safety, a responsive adult, and unconditional love and acceptance. Children who feel safe and loved will emerge from this pandemic resilient and ready to overcome other challenges in their future, and they may even have learned a thing or two along the way. So I just want to close by saying that.
Thank you so much, Jillian Cadogan, parent and teacher of a special needs, parent of a special needs child and a special needs teacher. Kudos to you. I take my hat off to you because that must be very, very difficult. All right, we've run out of time. Dennison, can I just maybe just get some final words then quickly in as the music is playing? Dr. Rock?
Just remember to breathe, everyone. We will get through this. We're going to have ups and downs, but together we can problem solve and we will get through it.
Thank you. Ministry of Education, could you give us some final remarks?
Certainly. I just want us to reflect on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which basically speaks to needs human beings have, starting with basic needs, provision of food, housing, provision of love and care, as Jillian said, going higher up the hierarchy, and then ending with self-actualization, where academic or achievement and learning comes in. I just want to say, coming out of the pandemic, I think what we all should learn is that we need to see our students as holistic beings, and that we need to recognize that we have to take care of all of their needs. And as I said before, a number of things would have exacerbated during this period that should cause us to open our eyes when we go into the physical environment to what our children have been dealing and grappling with. Mm-hmm. And as a ministry, as schools, as a society, as a whole, we have to work together to see how we can best meet those needs to ensure that we can create the best possible product coming out of our learning environment, investing heavily in our nation's greatest resource, and that is our children.
Gary, well, we might have run out of time. I do have to thank the panel. I want to thank Dr. Cheryl Rock from the Derek Smith School and Vocational Center. I do want to thank Jillian Cadogan, of course, Juanita Brathwaite. I want to thank you too, and Carrie Eiffel, the President of the Barbados Council for the Disabled. This program was sponsored by the Barbados Council for the Disabled. And remember, just because it ends in 2 days the month, please continue to support the disabled community. Please understand that we just need you to understand and help us all to navigate in somewhat level playing field. My name is Joanne Hague. I want to thank Dennis Johnson for producing a really great show. And until we meet again, God bless.